Look to Windward, Cassette 9.
Quillen went through what he knew of the relatively small number of involved species sufficiently advanced to take the culture on in this way. There were between 7 and 12 other species on that sort of level, depending which set of criteria you used. None were supposed to be particularly hostile to the culture. Several were allies. Nothing he knew of would have provided an obvious motive for what he was being trained to do. But then what he knew was only what the Involves allowed to be known about some of the more profound relationships between them, and that most certainly did not include everything that was really going on, especially given the timescales some of the Involves had become used to thinking on. He knew that the Oskandari air spheres were fabulously old, even by the standards of those who called themselves the Elder Races, and had succeeded in remaining mysterious throughout the scientific ages of hundreds of come and gone or been and sublimed species. The rumours had it that there was some sort of link left between whoever it was who had created the air spheres and subsequently quit the matter-based life of the universe and the mega and giga fauna which still inhabited the environments. This link with the gone before of the air spheres builders was reputedly the reason that all the hegemonizing and invasive species, not to mention the unashamedly nosy species, such as the culture, who had encountered the air spheres, had thought the better of trying to take them over, or study them too closely. These same rumors, backed up by ambiguous records held by the elders, hinted that, long ago, a few species had imagined that they could make the big wandering worlds part of their empire, or had taken it upon themselves to send in survey devices against the expressed wishes of the behemothors and the megalifine and gigalifine globular entities. Such species tended to disappear quickly or gradually from the records concerned thereafter, and there was firm statistical evidence that they disappeared more rapidly and more completely than species which had no record of antagonizing the inhabitants, and by implication, the guardians of the air spheres. Quillen wondered if the gone before of the air spheres had been in contact with the gone before of Chell. Was there some link between the sublimed of the two, or more, of course, species? Who knew how the sublimed thought, how they interacted? Who knew how alien minds worked? For that matter, who was entirely satisfied that they knew how the minds of one of their own species worked? The sublimed, he supposed, was the answer to all those questions. But any understanding seemed to be resolutely one way. He was being asked to perform a sort of miracle. He was being asked to commit mass murder. He tried to look into himself, and wondered if, even at that moment, the Chelgrian Puen were listening in to his thoughts, watching the images that flitted through his mind, measuring the fixity of his commitment and weighing the worth of his soul, and was faintly, but only faintly, appalled to realize that while he doubted his ability ever to perform the miracle, he was, at the very least, quite resigned to the commission of that genocide. And that night, not quite gone over to sleep, he remembered her room at the university, where they discovered each other, where he came to know her body better than his own, better than he had known anything or subject, certainly better than anything he was supposed to be studying, and knew it in darkness and light, and indeed placed a seed in a container over and over again. He could not use that. But he remembered the room, could see the shape of darkness that was her body as she moved about it sometimes, late at night, switching something off, dousing an incense coil, closing the window when it rained. Once she brought out some antique script strings, erotic tales told in knots, and let him bind her. Later she bound him, and he, who had always thought himself the plainest of young males, bluffly proud of his normalcy, discovered that such sex play was not the preserve of those he'd considered weak and degenerate. He saw the pattern of shadow her body made across the telltale lights and reflections in the room. Here, now, in this strange world, so many years of time and millennia of light away from that blessed time and place, he imagined himself getting up and crossing from the curl pad to the far side of the room. There had been, a little silver couplet on a shelf there. Sometimes, when she wanted to be absolutely naked, she would take off the ring her mother had given her. It would be his duty, his mission, to take the ring from her hand and place the gold band in the silver couplet. All right. Are we there? Yes, we're there. So, send? Yes. No. Well, we begin again. Think of, yes, the cup. We are quite certain the device is working, Estodien. We are. Then it's me. I just can't. It's just not in me. He dropped some bread into his soup. He laughed bitterly. Or it is in me, and I can't get it out. Patience, Major. Patience. There. Are we there? Yes. Yes, we're there. And send? Wait. I think I felt... Yes, Estodien! Major Quillen! It worked! Anur came running through from the refectory. Estodien, what do you think our allies will gain from my mission? I'm sure I don't know, Major. It is not really a subject it would benefit either of us to worry ourselves with. They sat in a small runabout, a sleek little two-person craft of the Soulhaven, in space, outside the airsphere. The same small airship that had carried them from the airsphere portal the day they'd arrived had taken Quillen and Viskile on the return trip. They had walked through the solid-seeming tube of air again, this time to the runabout. It had drifted away from the portal, then picked up speed. It seemed to be heading towards one of the sun moons which provided the airsphere with light. The moon drifted closer. Sunlight poured from what looked like a gigantic, near-flat crater covering half of one face. It looked like the incandescent eyeball of some infernal deity. All that matters, Major, Viskile said, is that the technology appears to work. They had conducted 10 successful trials with the supply of dummy warheads loaded inside the Soulkeeper. There had been an hour or so of failed attempts to repeat his initial success. Then he had managed to perform 2 displacements in succession. After that, the cup had been moved to different parts of the Soulhaven. Quillen had only 2 unsuccessful attempts before he became able to displace the specks wherever he was asked. On the third day, he attempted and conducted only 2 displacements to either end of the ship. This, the fourth day, was the first time Quillen would attempt a displacement outside the Soulhaven. "Are we going to that moon, Estodien?" he asked, as the giant satellite grew to fill the view ahead. "Nearby," Viskile said. He pointed. "You see that?" A tiny fleck of grey floated away to one side of the sun moon, just visible in the wash of light pouring from the crater. "That is where we are going." It was something between a ship and a station. It looked like it could have been either, and as though it might have been designed by any one of thousands of early-stage involved civilizations. It was a collection of grey-black ovoids, spheres and cylinders, linked by thick struts, revolving slowly in an orbit round the sun-moon, configured so that it would never fly over the vast light beam issuing from the side facing the airsphere. "We have no idea who built it," Viscile said. "It has been here for the last few tens of thousands of years, and has been much modified by successive species, who have thought to use it to study the airsphere and the moons. Parts of it are currently equipped to provide reasonable conditions for ourselves." The little runabout slid inside a hangar pod stuck to the side of the largest of the spherical units. It settled to the floor, and they waited while the pod's exterior doors revolved shut and air rushed in. The canopy unsucked itself from the little craft's fuselage. They stepped out into cold air that smelled of something acrid. The two big double cone-shaped drones whirred from another airlock, coming to hover on either side of them. There was no voice inside his head this time, just a deep humming from one of them, which modulated to say, "Estonian, Major, follow." And they followed, down a passageway and through a couple of thick, mirror-finished doors, to what appeared to be a sort of broad gallery, with a single long window facing them, and curving back behind where they had come in. It might have been the viewing cupola of an ocean liner, or a stellar cruise ship. They walked forward, and Quillen realized that the window, or screen, was taller and deeper than he had at first assumed. The impression of a band of glass or screen fell away as he understood that he was looking at the single great ribbon that was the slowly revolving surface of an immense world. Stars shone faintly above and below it. A couple of brighter bodies, which were just more than mere points of light, must be planets in the same system. The star, providing the sunlight, had to be almost directly behind the place he was looking from. The world looked flat, spread out like the peel from some colossal fruit and thrown across the background stars. Edged top and bottom in the glinting grey-blue translucency of enormous containing walls, the surface was separated into long strips by numerous regularly positioned verticals of grey-brown, white, and, in the centre, stark grey-black. These enormous mountain ranges stretched from wall to wall across the world, parcelling it up into what must have been a few dozen separate divisions. Between them, there lay about equal amounts of land and ocean. The land partly in the form of island continents, partly in smaller but appreciably large islands, set in seas of various hues of blue and green, and partly in great swathes of green, fawn, brown, and red, which extended from one retaining wall to the other, sometimes dotted with seas, sometimes not, but always traversed by a single darkly winding thread, or a collection of barely visible filaments. Green and blue tendrils laid across on the ochres, tans, and tawns of the land. Clouds swirled, speckled, waved, dotted, arced, and hazed in a chaos of patterns, near patterns, and patches. Brushstrokes strewn across the canvas of terrain and water below. "This is what you will see," one of the drones hummed. The Estonian Viscile patted Quillen on the shoulder. "Welcome to Masak Orbital," he said. "5 billion of them, Hyla. Males, females, they're young. This is a terrible thing we're being asked to do."
"It is. But we wouldn't be doing it if these people hadn't done something just as terrible to us."
"These people, Hyla? These people, right here on Masak?"
"Yes, these people, Quill. You've seen them. You've talked to them. When they discover where you're from, they tone it down for fear of insulting you, but they're so obviously proud of the extent and depth of their democracy. They're so damned smug that they're so fully involved. They're so proud of their ability to have a say,
and of their right to opt out and leave if they disagree profoundly enough with a course of action. So, yes, these people, they share collective responsibility for the actions of their minds, including the minds of contact and special circumstances. That's the way they've set it up. That's the way they want it to be. There are no ignorants here, Quill. No exploited. No invisibles or trodden-upon working class condemned forever to do the bidding of their masters. They are all masters. Every one. They can all have a say on everything. So, by their own precious rules, yes, it was these people who let what happened to Chell happen, even if few actually knew anything about the details at the time. Do only I think that this is harsh? Quill, have you heard even one of them suggest that they might disband contact? Or rein in SC? Have we heard any of them even suggesting thinking about that? Well, have we? No. No. Not one. Oh, they tell us of their regret in such pretty language, Quillen. They say they're so fucking sorry in so many beautifully expressed and elegantly couched and delivered ways. It's like it's a game for them. It's like they're competing to see who can be most convincingly contrite. But are they prepared to really do anything apart from tell us how sorry they are? They have their own blindnesses. It is the machines we have our real argument with. It is a machine you are going to destroy. And with it 5 billion people. They brought it upon themselves, Major. They could vote to disband contact today, and any one or any group of them could leave tomorrow for their ulterior or for anywhere else, if they decided they no longer agreed with their damned policy of interference. It is still a terrible thing we're asked to do, Hyla. I agree, but we must do it. Quill, I've avoided putting it in these terms because it sounds so portentous, and I'm sure it's something you've thought about yourself anyway, but I do have to remind you. 4.5 billion Cheldrian souls depend on you, Major. You really are their only hope. So I'm told. And if the culture retaliates, why should they retaliate against us? Because one of their machines goes mad and destroys itself. Because they will not be fooled. Because they are not so stupid as we would like them to be. Just careless sometimes. And even if they do suspect anything, they will not be certain it was our doing. If everything goes according to plan, it will look like the hub did it itself. And even if they were certain we were responsible, our planners think that they will accept that we brought about an honest revenge. You know what they say, Hyla. Don't fuck with the culture. We are about to. I don't buy the idea that this is some piece of wisdom the other involveds have arrived at thoughtfully after millennia of contact with these people. I think it's something the culture came up with itself. It's propaganda, Quill. Even so, a lot of the involveds seem to think it's true. Be even slightly nice to the culture, and it will fall over itself to be still nicer back. Treat them badly, and they act all hurt. It's contrived. You have to come on really evil to get them to drop the ultra-civilized performance. Slaughtering 5 billion of them, at least, will not constitute what they'd regard as an act of evil. They cost us that. We cost them that. They recognize that sort of revenge, that sort of trade, like any other civilization. A life for a life. They won't retaliate, Quill. Better minds than ours have thought this through. The way the culture will see it, they'll confirm their own moral superiority over us by not retaliating. They'll accept what we're going to do to them as the due payment for what they did to us without provocation. They'll draw a line under it there. It'll be treated as a tragedy. the other half of a debacle that began when they tried to interfere with our development. A tragedy, not an outrage.
They might wish to make an example of us.
We are too far down the involved pecking order to be worthy opponents, Quillen. There would be no honour for them in punishing us further. We have already been punished as innocents.
All you and I are trying to do is even up that earlier damage. I worry that we may be being as blind to their real psychology as they were to ours when they tried to interfere.
With all their experience, they were wrong about us. We have so little training in second-guessing the reactions of alien species. How can we be so certain that we will get it right where they failed so dismally?
Because this matters so much to us, that's why.
We have thought long and hard about what we are going to do. All this began exactly because they failed to do the same thing.
They have become so blasé about such matters that they try to interfere with as few ships as possible, with as few resources as possible, in search of a sort of mathematical elegance. They have made the fates of entire civilizations part of a game they play amongst themselves, to see who can produce the biggest cultural change from the smallest investment of time and energy. And when it blows up in their faces, it is not they who suffer and die, but us. 4.5 billion souls barred from bliss because some of their inhuman minds thought they'd found a nice, neat, elegant way to alter a society which had evolved to stability over 6 millennia. They had no right to try to interfere with us in the first place. But if they were determined to do it, they might at least have had the decency to make sure they did it properly, with some thought for the numbers of innocent lives they were dealing with.
We still may be committing a second mistake upon a first, and they may be less tolerant than we imagine.
If nothing else, Quillen, even if there is some retaliation by the culture, however unlikely that might be, it doesn't matter.
If we succeed in our mission here, then those 4.5 billion Cheldrian souls will be saved. They'll be admitted to heaven. No matter what happens after that, they'll be safe, because the Cheldrian Puen will have allowed them in. The Puen could allow the dead in now, Hyla. They could just change the rules, accept them into heaven.
I know, Quillen. But there is honour to be considered here, and the future.
When it was first revealed that each of our own deaths had to be balanced by that of an enemy, it wasn't revealed, Hyla. It was made up. It was a tale we told ourselves, not something the gods graced us with.
Either way, when we decided that was the way we wanted to lead our lives, with honour, don't you think that people realised then that it might lead to what looked like unnecessary deaths? This instruction to take a life for a life? Of course they knew that. But it was worth doing, because in the long run we benefited, as long as we maintained that principle. Our enemies knew we would not rest while we had deaths unavenged. And that still applies, Major. This is not some dry bit of dogma consigned to the history books or the string frames in monastic libraries. This is a lesson that we have to keep reinforcing. Life will go on after this, and Chell will prevail, but its rules, its doctrines must be understood by each new generation and each new species we encounter. When this is all over, and we are all dead, when this is just another piece of history, the line will have been held, and we'll be the ones who held it. No matter what happens, as long as you and I do our duty, people in the future will know that to attack Chell is to invite a terrible revenge. For their good, and I mean this, Quill, for their good as well as Chell's, it's worth doing now whatever has to be done.
I'm glad you seem so certain, Hyla. A copy of you will have to live with the knowledge of what we are about to do. At least I'll be safely dead, with no backup. Or at least not one that I know about. I doubt they'd have made one without your consent. I doubt everything, Hyla. Quill? Yes? Are you still on board? Do you still intend to carry out your mission? I do. Good fellow. Let me tell you, I admire you, Major Quillan. It's been an honor and a pleasure to share your head. Just sorry it's coming to an end so soon. I haven't carried it out yet. I haven't made the displays. You'll do it. They suspect nothing. The beast is taking you to its bosom, to the very center of its lair. You'll be fine. I'll be dead, Hyla. In oblivion. That's all I care about. I'm sorry, Quill, but what you're doing, there's no better way to go. I wish I could believe that. But soon it won't matter. Nothing will. Tersono made a throat-clearing noise.
Yes, it is a remarkable sight, isn't it, Ambassador? Quite stunning. Some people have been known to stand here, or sit here, and drink it in for hours. Kabe, you stood here for what seemed like half a day, didn't you?
I'm sure I must have, the Homomdan said. His deep voice echoed round the viewing gallery, producing echoes. I do beg your pardon. How long half a day must seem for a machine that thinks at the pace you do, Tersono? Please forgive me.
Oh, there is nothing to forgive. We drones are perfectly used to being patient while human thoughts and meaningful actions take place. We possess an entire suite of procedures specifically evolved over the millennia to cope with such moments. We are actually considerably less borable, if I may create a neologism, than the average human.
How comforting, Kabe said. And thank you. I always find such a level of detail rewarding.
You okay, Quillan? The Avatar said. He turned to the silver-skinned creature. I'm fine. He gestured towards the sight of the orbital surface, sliding slowly past, gloriously bright, 1.5 million kilometers away, but apparently much closer. The view from the gallery was normally magnified, not shown as it would have been if there was nothing between viewer and view but glass. The effect was to bring the interior perimeter closer, so that one could see more detail. The rate it was sliding past at also gave a false impression. The hub's viewing gallery section revolved very slowly in the opposite direction to the world's surface, so that instead of the entire orbital taking a day to pass in front of the viewer, the experience commonly occupied less than an hour.
Quillan? Hyla? Are you ready?
I know the real reason they put you aboard, Hyla.
Do you?
I believe I do.
And what would that be, Quill?
You're not my backup at all, are you? You're theirs.
Theirs?
Of Viscule, our allies, whoever they are, and the military high-ups and politicians who sanctioned this.
You'll have to explain, Major.
Is it supposed to be too devious for a bluff old soldier to have thought of?
What?
You're not here to give me somebody to moan to, are you, Hyla? You're not here to provide me with company, or to be some sort of expert on the culture?
Have I been wrong about anything?
Oh, no. No. They must have loaded you with a complete culture database. But it's all stuff anybody could get from the standard public reservoirs. Your insights are all second-hand, Hyla. I've checked.
I'm shocked, Quillan. Do we think this counts as slander or libel?
You are my co-pilot, though, aren't you?
That's what you were told I was to be. That's what I am.
In one of those old-fashioned, manual-only aeroplanes, the co-pilot is there, at least partly, to take over from the pilot if he's unable to perform his duties. Is that not true?
Perfectly.
So if I changed my mind now, if I was determined not to make the displacement, if I decided that I didn't want to kill all these people, what? What would happen? Tell me. Please be honest. We owe each other honesty.
You're sure you want to know?
Quite perfectly. You're right. If you won't make the displace, I make it for you. I know exactly the bits of your brain you use to make it happen. I know the precise procedures. Better than you, in a way.
So the displace takes place regardless.
So the displace takes place regardless. And what happens to me?
That depends on what you try to do. If you try to warn them, you drop down dead, or become paralyzed, or undergo a fit, or start babbling nonsense, or become catatonic. The choice is mine. Whatever might arouse the least suspicion in the circumstances.
My, can you do all that?
I'm afraid so, son. All just part of the instruction set. I know what you're going to say before you say it, Quill. Literally. It's only just before, but that's enough. I think pretty quickly in here. But, Quill, I wouldn't take pleasure in doing any of that. And I don't think I'm going to have to. You're not telling me you just thought of all this?
No. No, I thought of it a long time ago. I just wanted to wait until now to ask you, in case it spoiled our close relationship, Hyla.
You are going to do it, aren't you? I won't have to take over, will I?
I haven't really had those hours of grace at the beginning and end of each day at all, have I? You've been watching all the time, to make sure I didn't give any sign to them, just in case I had already changed my mind.
Would you believe me if I told you that you did have that time without me watching?
No.
Well, it doesn't really matter anyway. But as you might imagine, I will be listening in from now on, until the end.
Quillen, again, you are going to do it, aren't you? I won't have to take over, will I?
Yes, I'm going to do it.
No, you won't have to take over.
Well done, son. It is truly hateful, but it does have to be done. And it will all be over soon. For both of us.
And many more besides.
All right, then. Here we go.
He had made 6 successful displacements in a row within the mock-up of the hub, which had been constructed within the station orbiting the sun-moon of the air sphere. 6 successes out of 6 attempts. He could do it. He would do it. They stood within the mock-up of the observation gallery, faces lit by the image of an image. Viskile explained the thinking behind his mission.
We understand that in a few months' time, the hub mind of Masak Orbital will mark the passing of the light from the 2 exploding stars that gave the twin novae battle of the Idaean War its name.
Viskile stood very close to Quillen.
The broad band of light, a simulation of the image that he would see when he really stood in the viewing gallery of Masak Orbital Hub, seemed to pass in one of the Estodian's ears and out the other.
Quillen fought the urge to laugh,
and concentrated on listening intensely to what the older male was saying.
The mind that is now that of Masak Hub was once embodied within a warship which played a major part in the Idaean War. It had to destroy 3 culture orbitals during the same battle, to prevent them falling into enemy hands. It will commemorate the battle, and the 2 stellar explosions in particular, when the light of first one and then the other passes through the system Masak lies within. You must gain access to the hub and make the displacement before the second Nova. Do you understand, Major Cullen?
I do, Estodian.
The destruction of the hub will be timed to coincide with the real space light from the second Nova arriving at Masak. It will therefore appear that the hub mind destroyed itself in a fit of contrition due to its guilty conscience over the actions it was responsible for during the Iderian War. The death of the hub mind and the humans will look like a tragedy, not an outrage. The souls of those Chelgrians held in limbo by the dictates of honor and piety will be released into heaven. The culture will suffer a blow that will affect every hub, every mind, every human. We will have our numerical revenge and no more. But we will have that extra satisfaction that costs no more lives, only the additional discomfiture of our enemies, the people who, in effect, carried out an unprovoked surprise attack on us. Do you see, Quillen?
I see, Estodian.
Watch, Major Quillen.
I'm watching, Estodian.
They had quit the orbiting space station. He and Viskile were in the two-person runabout. The two alien drones were in a slightly larger, cone-shaped black body craft alongside. One of the ancient space station's pressurized containment vessels had suffered a carefully contrived blowout, which looked exactly like a chance catastrophe due to long-term neglect. It started to fall away on an altered orbit, its new heading taking it quickly towards the vast outpouring of energies erupting from the airsphere-facing side of the sun-moon. They watched for a while. The station curved closer and closer to the edge of the invisible light column. The little runabout's head-up display printed a line across the canopy for each of them, showing where that edge was. Just before the station encountered the column's perimeter, Viskile said, "That last warhead was not a dummy, Major. It was the real thing. The other end of the wormhole is located possibly inside the sun-moon itself, or possibly inside something very like it, a long way away. The energies involved will be very similar to what will happen to Masak Hub. That is why we are here, rather than anywhere else." The station never quite hit the edge of the light column. An instant before it would have, its slowly spinning, erratically configured shape was replaced with a shockingly, blindingly bright blast of light, which caused the runabout's canopy to black out over half its area. Quillen's eyes closed instinctively. The after-image burned behind his eyelids, yellow and orange. He heard Viskile grunt. Around them, the small runabout hummed and clicked and whined. When he opened his eyes, only the after-image was still there, glowing orange against the anonymous black of space, and jumping ahead of his gaze every time he shifted it about, trying in vain to see what might be left of the stricken, tumbling space station.
There. That looked good to me. I think you've done it. Well done, Quill.
There, Tersono said, placing a ring of red light onto the screen over a group of lakes in one continent. That is where the Stallion Bowl is, the venue for tomorrow's concert. The drone turned to the Avatar. Is everything ready for the concert, Hub?
The Avatar shrugged. Everything except the composer.
Oh, I'm sure he is just teasing us, Tersono said quickly.
Its aura field positively shone with ruby light.
Of course Kerzilla will be there.
How could he not be? He'll be there, I'm quite certain.
I wouldn't be too sure about that, Kabe rumbled.
No, he will. I'm quite positive.
Kabe turned to the Chelgrian.
You will be taking up your invitation, won't you, Major Quillen? Major?
What? Oh, yes, yes, I'm looking forward to it, of course.
Well, Kabe said, nodding massively. They'll find somebody else to conduct, I dare say.
The Major seemed distracted, Kabe thought. Then he seemed to pull himself together. Well, no, he said, looking to each of them in turn. If my presence is really going to prevent Marai Zilla from attending his own first night, then of course I'll stay away.
Oh, no,
Tersono said, aura flashing briefly blue.
There's no need for that. No, not at all. I'm sure that Kurzilla has every intention of being there. He may leave it until the last moment before he sets off, but set off he will, I'm quite positive. Please, Major Quillen, you must be there for the concert. Zilla's first symphony in 11 years, the first ever premiere outside Chell, you coming all this way, you two the only Chelgrians for millennia, you must be there. It will be the experience of a lifetime.
Quillen looked steadily at the drone for a moment. I think Marai Zilla's presence at the concert is of more importance than mine. To go, knowing that I would be keeping him away, would be a selfish, impolite, and even dishonorable act, don't you think? But please, let's talk no more of it. He left the airsphere the next day. Viskile saw him off from the little landing stage behind the giant hollowed-out husk which had provided their quarters. Quillen thought the older male seemed distracted. "Is everything all right, Estorienne?" he asked. Viskile looked at him. "No," he said, after what looked like a little thought. "No, we had an intelligence update this morning, and our wizards of counter-espionage have come up with 2 pieces of worrying news, rather than the more common single bombshell. It appears that not only do we have a spy amongst our number, but also there may be a culture citizen here somewhere in the air sphere." The Estorienne rubbed the top of his silver stave, frowning at his distorted reflection there. "One might have hoped they could have told us these things earlier, but I suppose later is better than never." Viskile smiled. "Don't look so worried, Major. I'm sure everything is still under control, or soon will be." The airship touched down. Ual stepped out. The white-furred male smiled broadly and bowed minutely when he saw Quillen. He bowed more deeply when he faced the Estorienne, who patted him on the shoulder. "You see, Quillen, Ual is here to take care of things. Go back, Major. Prepare for your mission. You will have your co-pilot before too long. Good luck." "Thank you, Estorienne." Quillen glanced at the grinning Ual, then bowed to the older male. "I hope everything goes well here." Viskile let his hand rest on Ual's shoulder. "I'm sure it will. Goodbye, Major. It's been a pleasure. Again, good luck, and do your duty. I'm sure you will make us all proud." Quillen stepped aboard the little airship. He looked out through one of the gauzy windows as the craft lifted away from the platform. Viskile and Ual were already deep in conversation. The rest of the journey was a mirror image of the route he had taken on the way out, except that when he got to Chell, he was taken from Equator Launch City in a sealed shuttle straight to Ubrent, and then by car, at night, directly to the gates of the monastery at Cadrasset.
This ends side 1 of cassette 9.